I went and studied with Rangan Chatterjee. Many of you know Rangan. I started to look into something called lifestyle medicine, and that absolutely fascinated me. My eyes were just opened. My eyes were open to the effects it has on our immune system, to how it's the pathway to joy, to how it motivates you, to how it prevents anxiety and depression. We miss the essence of what it is to be alive, to be joyful, free, and to feel loved. Because guess what? We all want to be our best. Your best may not look like the cultural expectations of what society says. We're all going on this journey, wherever it is that we're going. You know, your work is your greatest vehicle for your personal growth. You know, if I was to die tomorrow, would I be proud of myself for what I'm doing, how I'm trying to serve others, how I'm trying to help?
Welcome to the Mindful and Driven podcast, where we help you to not decide what's really important while chasing your dreams. Today's guest is Dr. Nilesh Sadhguru, who's a high-performance coach, medical doctor, and speaker. In his coaching, he blends the science he's learned from his medical career with compassion to teach people how to be the best they can possibly be, but also the kindest they can be too and the most compassionate to others. Like many of us, he put so much pressure on himself when he was younger and went through all the right steps, became a doctor, but he realized that that pressure was crippling him, and he rediscovered compassion, which makes him who he is today, and is able to help CEOs, executives, and high performers across a huge range of different industries. It was a really insightful conversation. Let's go on to the show. Welcome to Mindful and Driven Podcast, Nilesh. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much for having me, Amadi.
So how you met is we went to the same event by a previous guest, Simon Ong, his book launch. And we didn't actually talk while we were there, but then we've been following each other on Instagram for a while. And you reached out to me and we met after that. And it's like, great. Like, I love the way you think about the world, and especially marrying the science from your career as a doctor with also your life experiences and the things you've struggled with in your own life. And like, along that journey, what's some common advice you've listened to or you've heard that you disagree with and you think people are getting the wrong idea?
Yeah. Thank you so much for this question. It's such a pleasure to be here. I've got so much gratitude to speak on this podcast, and hello to all the guests. So one piece of advice, I think the life-changing thing for me has been going on the path of compassion. And it's this misnomer, misperception, this bullshit belief that compassion is weak. And that it's a sign of pity, or it's unambitious, or it's lazy. And actually, there's a huge amount of personal experience, of coaching stories, and also of scientific evidence that says otherwise.
And can you go into that a bit more? Where did you used to believe that compassion was weak in the past? And did you change your mind over time?
Well, the truth is, I don't think I really knew what compassion was. And it's really funny saying that, because I trained for 15 years, I've been in the medical profession, and we spoke about sympathy, we spoke about empathy, we didn't really speak about compassion. And I was reminiscing about this the other day. How did I get into compassion? Well, through a lot of personal struggles with my son becoming a father, feeling ashamed, like I was a bad father because he had developmental and behavioral challenges. And I think I found some of the Dalai Lama's books very serendipitously. And I read about compassion, and my eyes were just opened. My eyes were opened to the effects it has on our immune system, to how it's the pathway to joy, to how it motivates you, to how it prevents anxiety and depression. Now, I'm not going to present it as a panacea, so I don't believe anything is. And that's why I quite specifically, my niche is compassion and high performance, because it's the marriage of these two concepts. I don't believe I fully knew what it was. And then when I started to discover it, even as I started to read about it, my belief that it was weak probably stopped me from fully embracing the path of compassion.
I read about this recently. I think there was a big story in BBC the other day where I think it was in particular for midwives, and how they talk to patients with struggling with fertility. And there's some medical terms being used, for example, like incompetent cervix or like failed pregnancy or things like that. And they'd use these terms in front of their patients. And they weren't necessarily considering that's the proper term for it, right? That's the medical term. But the effect that had on the patients, because it made it feel like it was their fault, rather than it saying, like, this is something that's happened to you that we can then fix, we can then work through. It was more like, your cervix is incompetent, which obviously for somebody who's in a very vulnerable state, it's not very like something you want to hear. And do you feel like in your medical career, especially in the early stages, that kind of scientific, kind of cold way of looking at things was encouraged as well, where you didn't necessarily, I know, for example, where this idea that if you get too compassionate to your patients, then if something goes wrong, then it's obviously harder to then deal with because you've got that bond and you take it a bit more personally. So do you think maybe you didn't practice compassion as much before because you needed that almost a defense mechanism?
Well, I think now it's really important, Amardeep, to discuss the differences between empathy and compassion, because I definitely, for a lot of my career, even after I started to learn about compassion, what I was actually doing was sympathy and empathy. So sympathy is when you're physically moved by other people's suffering. We can go into more detail, but essentially you're physically moved. You see somebody drowning in the lake, you jump in the lake with them and you wave your arms up in the air, you're struggling with them. And certainly I've been in that situation as a doctor, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's very touching. Empathy is intuitive awareness. Okay, so really interesting. It requires effortful thinking. It requires imagination. It's what makes us human. It uses an area of our brain called the insular cortex. So you actually put yourself in other people's shoes. And the interesting thing about empathy is that it doesn't always have to be about suffering. So marketers, for example, are very good empathizers. It's not always about suffering. Compassion is showing an awareness of someone's suffering, showing an agreement with the meaning of their circumstances, and then taking action to relieve their suffering. So the big difference here with compassion is that you are doing something about someone's suffering. So it takes away this hopelessness, this feeling of being moved by the situation, and it taps into our innate helper's high. So actually, we know from brain studies, and I can go into more detail about this, but we've all known that feeling when you've seen someone suffering and you've just listened. And it's felt amazing to help that person just for the pure joy of helping them, not expecting anything in return. That's a key bit. So to kind of relay back to when I was a doctor, two things that I was doing differently was, number one, I was actually and this is, you know, being completely open, I think it's important for me to be vulnerable and share these things. But I would say a lot of my early career in medicine, I was expecting to receive something from the patient, whether it was, oh my God, you're the best doctor ever, or thank you so much, or I still had that expectation. And the second thing was that sometimes I wasn't taking action to relieve their specific suffering. I was taking action on what the textbook said. And this is a really important point. And I know people listen to this be like, oh, yeah, my doctor didn't listen to me, didn't hear me, didn't really take into account what was going on. And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. And do you feel like once you learned compassion and you started working with them more yourself, that it obviously bled into all areas of your life, not just your work and being a doctor, also your relationships and with your like kids and helping them to grow and develop, and even your friendships? Like, where do you think like compassion has really helped you in strengthening some of your relationships?
Yeah, well, there's one story in particular, and I mentioned my son already. And I mentioned this, so I'll go into a little bit more detail. But it was it's been 2018, and we'd known for a while that my son Freddie was a little bit different. He would scream unexpectedly. He wouldn't make eye contact. He was slightly delayed in his social development. And as time went on, it progressed with inattention, with behavioral troubles. And I remember one day in particular, I took my son out to the park, and it was the winter in the UK. It was cold and it was muddy and it was raining. And he wanted to kind of run across the field when we were about to go home. And without really understanding him, I picked him up and he got really upset and he ran off and he fell and slid in the mud and he was covered in mud. So I picked him up out of the mud and I took him into the car and he was screaming. If anyone has a child who's not neurotypical, they'll know what I mean by this. I mean, he screamed for quite some time. And I got back home after that and I just sat and I cried in my kitchen. I just didn't know what to do. I thought, gosh, I'm the only person who's suffering with this. And do you know what was really crazy about this is what I was thinking about was me. How am I going to cope? How am I going to have a child with these kinds of struggles? And then also it was my perspective. What are we going to do if he doesn't cope at school? All of these things. And I had this kind of, you know, if you like, transcendental out-of-body experience when I realized, but surely I'm not the only one who's experiencing this. And in that moment, I found compassion, because that sits in the essence of compassion, that we all have challenges, we all suffer as humans. And maybe our circumstances are slightly different, but every one of us has experienced guilt, blame, shame, grief, fear, sadness, loss. And so through that, I then started to take action and I started to read up, okay, what are the other children, parents doing with children who have these struggles? I started to employ the strategy, I started to read more books. I started to learn about the brain and become fascinated with the brain. And goodness me, he improved so much over the course of around a few years. He's at mainstream school. He's doing well now. So that relationship got significantly better because of the commitment to compassion and essentially personal growth. You know, this is the power. This is the power. This is what we all are here for. When I'm coaching people, you know, you say, Nilesh, I want to make £20,000 a month, or I want my business to grow by this much, or... And I say, okay, and then what's next? And they say, well, then I'll be able to go on a holiday. Okay, and why do you want to do that? Well, then I can actually spend some time with my family. I say, how about you do that now? Yeah, I think we miss the point. And I was one of those people as well, that we miss the essence of what it is to be alive, to be joyful, free, and to feel loved. So this is how compassion's affected my relationships. And as well, there are a lot of stories I've got in my coaching clients' relationships as well.
What made you start the coaching side of things? Was it because of the effect that you, like, compassion had in your own life? Or where did that kind of start from, that new business?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, I'd love to say like there's some kind of Hollywood one moment, but the reality is that I was very, you know, I followed the status quo for life. I went to university, I studied hard, I followed the rules, I became a doctor. My parents were really proud. I managed to somehow get my dream job right out of becoming a GP, where I bought into a practice. But then quickly, I realized that it wasn't what I had envisaged, and I couldn't help people in the way that I wanted with my medical training. Like about 4 in 5 people, they had problems that were stress-related. Related to the mind. So I started to delve deeper and I started to look into something called lifestyle medicine. And that absolutely fascinated me. I went and studied with Rangan Chatterjee. Many of you know Rangan. And that was amazing. But in learning about lifestyle medicine again, it led me deeper and deeper into the mind and how we only engage with difficult habits because of our own internal resistance to what is. So alongside that, I was leaving my GP partnership and I was being coached. And this is often the way how people find coaching. I was being coached through the Leadership Academy, NHS Leadership Academy. And serendipitously, she reached out and said, my amazing coach, and said, look, you seem really interested in coaching. Would you like to train? And that's how I started on my path to coaching. Of course, it's been a much longer path than that to what I'm doing now. But I would highly recommend it if anyone's thinking about it. I would highly recommend getting a coach if you have any dreams, hopes, and desires that you're going towards. And just learning more about the industry.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I want to take a quick break to ask you to check in on yourself. There's many people struggling with balance, and there's nothing to be ashamed about. The tips that my guests and I share can hopefully help you along the way. But if you already feel overwhelmed or burnt out, it's probably best that you ask somebody for help too. For some, this might be a friend or family member, but others might feel like they have nobody they can talk to. If you're one of these people, check out the link in the show notes. It's for United for Global Mental Health. They've got helplines all across the world with people willing to listen on the other side. It's important to let somebody know how you're feeling. Now, back to the show.
What, like in your coaching training, surprised you of things that you thought maybe you were doing that wrong earlier in your life? Because obviously part of coaching is all about asking the right questions rather than telling people what to do. Was there any other things like that which really surprised you that were really effective in helping people that maybe you hadn't learned in the past and you hadn't been using those techniques when you were younger?
The first is the lamppost metaphor, which is there's so much value, and it's actually very difficult to do, but people don't need to be fixed. They need to be understood. And one of the most powerful ways you can help someone be understood is to be a non-judgmental, open guide for them. And some people listen to that and go, wow, that sounds really easy. It's really not, because you have to come completely out of your own head and be completely present with the person at hand. Put away all of your past limiting beliefs, which is why actually I believe anyone who wants to be a coach, it's essential that you get a coach and that you go very deep into your own work. You can't be fully present with someone if you are relating all of their stories to yourself. Some of that's natural as a human, but the more you practice. So that's the first lamppost metaphor. The second thing is coaching, you're right, it isn't about the answers, but it's about helping people see something that they can't see. And this is such a beautiful moment when it occurs, and often it occurs outside of the session. But my role as a coach is not to be a guru, but it's to be a guide. To guide people to unleash the veil of what they believe to be true and to see a new path. And then the third one, which I struggled with for a long time, is to challenge them. People only want to be challenged when they are in a compassionate space, when they feel connected and listened to and heard. But people love to be challenged, because guess what? We all want to be our best. Now, your best may not look like the cultural expectations of what society says. Your best may be raising a farm with chickens and a family of like four amazing kids. If that's your best, that's beautiful. That's amazing. And in fact, some of my clients have been like that, and that's a wonderful thing. But we all look for our innate potential. And again, compassion helps you do that, because once you fully accept yourself, as Carl Rogers says, then you can truly change.
So did you get coaching yourself before you started coaching other people? And what did they open up in you? What did you learn about yourself from that coaching?
Wow, yes. So I've invested dozens of thousands in coaching. I'm somebody who, over time, the number one thing it changed is I became someone who started to live with more integrity. And I think that that's really important to say, because if we're being truthful with ourselves, that most of us, and me too, I was living as a reactive pinball to life. I was not conscious of how my thoughts, words, and actions led to my results. So the most important thing it taught me was to practice and live with integrity. It also taught me how scared I was about a lot of things. And I still am fearful of things. Of course, I mean, anyone who says that they aren't is, I believe, is not woken up to their truth. We all have fears. But when I went through coaching and the multiple times I've gone through it, it's been about changing my relationship with what I'm resisting. I think that people have another kind of BS belief that joy is a diagnosis of inclusion. We want our lives to be joyful, right? Everyone would agree with that. Joyful, loving, free. But actually, joy is the absence of any resistance. Let's think about this for a minute. When you get on holiday, say, and you get on that sun lounger, you're there on holiday, what's that first thing you do? You sigh, you release. There's no resistance to anything that's going on. You don't want anything to be different. So coaching really helped me change my relationship to that, to see, okay, what am I resisting here? How can I release? How can I lean into it, embrace it? And you know, what a powerful skill, because the resistance comes, you know, and as you climb the ladder, it comes thick and fast, right? Even more. So if you can change the way you relate to yourself, you're on an amazing journey.
Looking at that now, because you obviously made quite significant changes to your own life in the last few years, what's something you're working on now? Like, how are you trying to improve yourself now? Because obviously the journey of self-improvement never really stops. And even with your coaching and you're helping other people, what are you working on internally? What's the different targets you've set yourself or areas where you want to improve?
Oh, thank you so much for asking this, because like I say, I'm somebody who really, I think it's absolutely paramount that I practice what I preach. So first thing I've recently changed is I blocked out a whole one day a week purely for personal growth and white space. And you being a solopreneur, you know, like how difficult that is. This is where I could be doing all the other things, like working on my website, increasing revenue. But I never forget this analogy. There's no point you riding a bike with a half blown up tire when you could be spending the time blowing up the tire and going much with less danger and much quicker. And so I make a lot of time to read, to do courses, to go deep within myself. But the specific things is at the moment, energy. I'm working on my energy in quite a lot of detail. I'm working on my clarity as well in quite a lot of detail. I mean, clarity is a funny one. I think clarity, I remember when I was looking to get an engagement ring for my now wife, and I started to read about diamonds. And, you know, there's four things that a diamond is graded by: a clarity, the cut, etc., the carat. And the one grade in difference in clarity, the value of the diamond goes up exponentially. And I believe that's an amazing metaphor for life. It's true. Those that have real clarity in their message, clarity in who they are people that can impact more people. So, yeah, clarity and energy are things that I'm particularly working on at the moment.
I love what you said about clarity, because it's something that I'm working on myself right now. So the day we're recording this is actually the 1 year anniversary of me leaving my job and becoming a full-time creator, entrepreneur, whatever you want to call what I do now. And I gave myself this first year to experiment, to do lots of different things. And I have definitely done lots of different things, which is a bit too much often. And now what I'm really focused on is that clarity of, like, what exactly do I want to do? And how can I remove some of the different things that are distractions? Maybe I do enjoy doing them. But the way I'd say it as well is, like, let's say you enjoy dancing. If you do 12 different types of dance in the same day, you're going to be exhausted. Even though individually, if you did one a day, you'd enjoy it. And I think that's the stage I'm at right now, is that I enjoy all of the things I'm doing, but there's just too many of them. And they're then bleeding into each other where I can't be present in what I'm doing. And that clarity is something which I think is so important, as you mentioned, because it's partly, I think, is that it's insecurity, it's ego of letting go of the things which is hard because it's tied up in you, right? Of if you do everything, then you can say that you do everything, or because then you can give that feedback to yourself, oh, I did all of this week. But actually, in reality, it might be better to cut some of that stuff and say, I did this and I'm really proud of what I did. The quality of what I did is really, like, exceptional. I'm really happy with this. And I found sometimes by taking on too many things, I'm then starting to be less proud of my work. I was like, actually, I need to take a step back. And it's been, so obviously in the last few months, you've stopped being a practicing doctor and you've gone full time into coaching and to try to help people in a different way. How difficult was that decision for you to step away from doing both things at the same time?
I'm actually going to ask you a question first, because I think it's really important. I want to ask you, and I will answer this, but how do you decide, Amardeep, what to drop? Do you have a process, a decision-making process that you go through that helps you make that decision, that cut.
So something I've been working on recently. So one thing I have is using Notion, you can do on paper. I just have a single brain space and I've got all the different things that I'm working on. And I put a number of brains next to them of how much of my mental energy it takes up. And I then, so say, for example, I'm working on a course right now. That course at the moment is 5 brains because I know that that's going to massively move the needle. Because once that course comes out, I can send that to the different people I work with, the people I've interviewed in the past. And it enables that scalable income and allows me to help more people, which doesn't have such a big effect on my time. Because so much of my work at the moment is very much, I need to give effort to it. So I want to look at those ways of how can I help more people without putting in more effort each time. So that's something which I think is really important. At the same time, I've got other things which maybe have a high number of brains. So out of 5, like let's say it's 3 out of 5 brains. But then I look at it, it's like, why am I spending that much time on that? That doesn't matter to me in the long term. It doesn't align with my goals. So I'm looking at each thing on this list and assessing it based on, do I want to be doing this in a year's time? Or is it just something I'm doing now because I feel like I need to? So that's one question I ask myself is, do I still want to be doing this in the future?
Yeah, yeah.
Or am I just doing it because it's there, because I've won that contract or I've won that client? Am I just doing it because it's already in my calendar? The other one is whether or not it aligns with the other things. Because if, for example, I'm doing a course and I'm doing a coaching that's related to that course, then that combined energy is actually one stream, one river. So I've used this example before about people often focus on, for example, passive income, but having many different streams. But in reality, if you can focus on the river that feeds those streams, that's usually the better idea. So you can have, if you get really good at one particular area, that will then feed those streams. If you focus on the streams at the end, then your brain is in a million different places, which is very hard to take. So I'm looking at, I want to focus on this area and this area. So I've got 2 main rivers and they all connect to each other. If I'm doing something which is totally unrelated, how much energy is that taking away from me? And do I enjoy that enough to keep it there?
Yes.
So for example, with dance, I love to dance. Me dancing isn't affecting my ability to coach or my ability to do other things. It's a totally different skill set. It's a totally different type of energy. But let's say, for example, I'm writing articles for somebody which doesn't really align my goals. It's siphoning off something from that river away from my goals, away from what I want.
Yeah.
So those are, I think, the 2 main questions I ask myself. Well, 3 main things is, how much energy is it taking out of me? Is it aligned with the main pillars of what I want to do? Is it related to that subject? And then the third thing is, what was my third thing? It was, if it's related, if it's something in a year's time I want to still be doing, or is it just transient? And the transient ones sometimes are hard to let go of because they pay money, or that there's fulfilling some underlying need that I have, but they're often just short term. So being able to get rid of that is quite a difficult thing. But I've realized that's what I need to do for the sake of my own mental health and mental well-being.
I think for me, the purpose of your life is to live a life of purpose. That was Robert Byrne that said that. And it's so incredibly true. We're all going on this journey, wherever it is that we're going. You know, your work is your greatest vehicle for your personal growth. Every step that you take teaches you more about yourself. And what I mean by that is, if you're going on a journey, let's say for me it was medicine, and I felt like I wasn't learning as much about myself as I would do by going on the journey of coaching. And the other thing for me was that the world doesn't need, so it was again a lovely Howard Thurman quote, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive. Because the world needs people who have come alive. And this is so true. So when I was making that decision to go on sabbatical from medicine, there were a few questions that went through my mind. The first one, and this is going to be a very powerful one, especially if you have a close relationship with your parents or loved ones, was I read in a book and it said, what would you do differently if your father was dead? incidentally, 2 months later, my dad did die quite unexpectedly. Well, he was chronically unwell, but it was unexpected. And the first thing that came to mind was I would go on sabbatical for medicine, which showed me that I was, it was one of these kinds of attachments that I had because I didn't want to feel like I was letting down my father, who had always wanted to be a doctor himself and was so proud that I had become a doctor. But it wasn't making me come alive. It wasn't, I still loved medicine, but the desire to impact people in the coaching world was so much higher. That was the first thing. The second thing was about what would I love? What would I absolutely love? Now, I think people get a bit confused with this word love, and me too. You know, for me, love isn't just, oh, this, everything is amazing, everything's perfect. You know, I love my kids and they're difficult sometimes, you know, but I accept them. And I want them to grow and I want us to grow together. So love is acceptance and growth. It's unconditional acceptance and growth. Was I prepared to unconditionally accept medicine? Was I prepared to do that? No. I mean, the answer was that coaching was giving me more of that unconditional acceptance and growth. And so that was the other reason. Last of all, it came down to values. And my four values was compassion, openness, growth, and challenge. And I believe that going on this journey, again, I like to kind of live from the end. You know, if I was to die tomorrow, would I be proud of myself for what I've been, what I'm doing, how I'm trying to serve others, how I'm trying to help? Yes. Would I have been disappointed in myself if I'd stayed in medicine? I probably would have. Because our life is so precious and our time here is limited. And so, you know, it's a paradox that we have. We say, you know, when I'm 40, I'll start that mission. When I'm, you know, got a few more dollars in the bank or pounds in the bank, I'll go on that dream holiday. I'll spend more time with my spouse and my loved ones. But people forget that there's such uncertainty about the future. And you know, when you really live into that, you like, for me, my eyes have been opened and I think, well, you don't really know what can happen tomorrow. So it's important you live today so that you amaze yourself and you're proud of what you do.
Looking forwards now, what are your goals or what you're trying to work towards with the coaching and what you're working on now? Because am I right in thinking as well, your wife is working with you too?
Yeah.
It's become a little bit of a family business.
Yes. Yeah, so my wife's, it's absolutely amazing that that's happened because I never would have, again, we just don't know what happens in the future. And there's been incredible growth in the way that we interact with each other as well, which has been amazing. Yeah, so with the coaching, I've got kind of three main wings, as many coaches do. On one side, it's the coaching, elevating entrepreneurs beyond their best. And really, it's impacting people who are looking to serve others, looking to go inwards so that they can give outwards. And that could be a leader, an executive, an entrepreneur, a creative. It's a broad range of people, but they're all willing and committed to going in so they can serve outwards. And I'm really, really enjoying, I mean, for me, it's about coaching people that I believe are inspiring. And that's very important to me. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they have loads of external success. It just means that they are somebody who's on that path of personal growth. So that's the coaching wing. And I've got my one-on-one clients, which I'm connecting deeper with at the moment. And really, I've got really enjoying having these long one-year contracts, amazing relationships with them. The other two areas is speaking, which I'll be developing a bit more as time goes on, and writing. Now, with these things, as many of you guys will know listening to the pod, I've decided to make my primary focus of interest coaching for the time being, because I believe it's where I'm able to deliver the most transformation to someone and provide the most value. And so although I have these streams going on in the background, just like you were talking about, Amandeep, I'm on purpose, I'm not focusing as much on the others, so that I can, you know, build that element a little bit more. It's probably important to say the biggest mistake I've made in my entrepreneurial career so far is trying to run before I can walk and believing the business was older than it was. I've run two group programs, which have been successful and brilliant. I've had one-on-one clients, you know, I've had some really wonderful things happen, but also I've overcommitted, which I know that you can relate to. I've been overly optimistic, which is, you know, is definitely something that that's possible in entrepreneurship. And so I'm paring back now and I'm just sticking to, like you spoke about, just a few goals, but trying to go really deep with them so that I can serve people in the most impactful way, help them become compassionate high performers, basically.
So if there's one mindset shift you think people listening today should make that would make a really positive difference to them, you could only pick one, what would it be?
Choose compassion, focus on connection. It's a mantra I've been saying to myself for a very, very long time. If there's one mindset shift, it's to choose compassion for yourself, for others, for the world. Why? Because, you know, when you really pay attention to your emotions, you'll realize that more often than not, that we are in a state that's one of challenge, suffering. And if you can learn to master that, if you can choose compassion for yourself in those moments and compassion for others, it's the pathway to joy. And then connection. Now, I love speaking about the science. Hopefully it won't bore anyone, but I really love speaking about the science of connection because it's truly amazing. So an 80-year study from Robert Waldinger that's come out of Harvard shows us that having good quality relationships is the thing that relates most to longevity of health and happiness. But our instincts and society and culture tells us more, 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 bigger, 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 earning more, booking our calendars full, not taking the time. The truth is, the reason why it's important to learn how to be productive is so that you can spend time on things that take time. You know, you can't rush a bath time with your child or a date night with your partner or, you know, finding the right partner. You can't rush those things. So choosing connection is the thing that's going to make you healthiest and happiest. And we also know from Martin Seligman and Ed Diener that the top 10% of happiest people in the world, again, have the closest social relationships. So if you're struggling, if you're in a difficult time, if you're feeling overwhelmed, stressed, burnt out, choose compassion for yourself, for others, and just focus on openly connecting with people. And through doing that, you know, I believe that that's the most powerful mindset shift you can make.
I've really enjoyed talking to you today, Nilesh. Where can people listening who maybe aren't familiar with your work yet, where can they hear more about you and more about what you're up to?
Thank you, Amadeeb. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you too. It's been awesome. I've enjoyed it a lot. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm most active on Instagram at Dr. Satguru. That's DrSatguru. Also www.drsatguru.com. Very simple and straightforward. Yeah, I would love to hear from people. I love to connect, as I said. Do drop me a message, a DM. Share with me about your hopes and dreams. I'll ask you about your hopes and dreams. And don't forget to choose compassion and focus on connection.
So the final question I ask everybody, and so we end the podcast off on a positive note, is what's one small thing that's brought you joy recently?
Oh my gosh. Really simple things. I believe the best things in life are free. Absolutely true. Just literally playing in the garden with my kids the other day, where, you know, I was just being silly with them in the garden. Running up and down, and it was a beautiful day, and being very present in that moment. It's so simple and straightforward. And yeah, how many times in the past would I not have been present in that situation? Oh my gosh, so many times. So that's one thing that brought me joy.
If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave me a 5-star review. It really helps to get the message out further. Wherever you're listening, it would be awesome if you could subscribe and to share on your social media channels. If you want to see more of my work and advice, you can find all of the links in the show notes. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have a lovely day.